Back with Andrew Collins, and we'll be back to talk with him about the Denisovans and the strange things they brought to America. And welcome back, Andrew Collins with us. Andrew, you were talking about the Denisovans and their genes that they may have passed on?
Yeah. Well, all the indications are that the Denisovans may have had a different type of mindset to us, because we have to start looking at ourselves. If they were living in very remote communities, but they were also at the same time creating, you know, fabulous jewelry. They were creating the first bone needles. You know, they had tailored clothing. They may well have ridden around on horses. They were creating all these incredible stone tools. What was going on in their minds? Well, what we've noticed is that they did have two genes which in modern humans are related to autism. And basically, obviously with autism and people on the autistic spectrum, we know that they can also possess savant-like qualities, qualities that allow them to replicate, you know, without any kind of artistic background, let's say pieces of music, sculptures of art, painting, stuff like that. But also they can calendar count, they can remember numbers, incredible lengths, let's say the decimal places of pi, for instance, and many other things as well. And when you start looking at people who are autistic, if you look at them for their achievements and their savant-like qualities, you start seeing the Denisovans as possibly having a very similar mindset. And it could well be that this was the reason why they advanced much quicker than, let's say, the Neanderthals, who were, you know, very advanced in their own way, but they certainly were not advanced as the Denisovans. And our own ancestors, our own anatomical modern humans coming out of Africa, it would seem that, you know, what we did was we would go from place to place, exploiting the resources, you know, grabbing territories, moving on very gradually across a period of thousands of years. And then finally, we came across the Denisovans. We interbred with them, and everything starts changing. We start having a different mindset. We start becoming more artistic, more creative. And in many ways, this helps us to kickstart civilization. It helps us to think differently, not just from a material perspective, but also from a sort of non-material, you know, like a metaphysical or cosmological. You know, it allowed us to start looking for our cosmic origins, our roots amongst the stars. And this is where these ideas, which I think were adopted by very early forms of shamanism, come into play. Because there is every indication that the Denisovans were also very powerful shamans. I mean, so was the Neanderthals, but it would seem as if the Denisovans would seem to have created what we know as this bird shamanism. You know, they would have paraphernalia relating to the birds. They would wear cloaks of feathers, and, you know, be able to use this to enter altered states of consciousness that would carry them into the invisible world around them. And this is something that we adopt and continue to use all the way down to places like Göbekli Tepe in southeast Turkey, where you've got incredible bird and vulture imagery here, which seems to have its roots in a much earlier age connecting with the Denisovans. But beyond that, we continue to use these ideas right the way down through to the Bronze Age, where, to be honest, everything starts to change. And, you know, city-states, civilization, you know, starts to rise up in a way which had never been there before. And, of course, you have more formalized religion and ideas. But up to that point, it seems that a lot of what we were doing may have been many tens of thousands of years old and had its roots with the Denisovans in particular.
Was there, or do you believe, Andrew, there was any kind of ET connection here?
I mean, I don't know is the honest answer. What I can say is that I don't dispute the fact that there could have been. some kind of connection with the mindset of these people, because I see ET contact with humans more in terms of something that's happening in the mind. I mean, that to me is something that would be much easier than the idea that you have physical spaceships coming down here and landing and educating humans, whatever. I see it as something connected with what we know as quantum entanglement. Quantum entanglement is the idea that particles, no matter how far apart that they get, are interlinked. And when you have whole seas of particles, let's say some that are dancing in my head and the same dance is being done in another person's head, could explain what we know as telepathy or mind over matter and even precognition, because all of this is happening on a subatomic level, a quantum level. And I think that the chances are of communication with extraterrestrials probably was more to do with communication through the mind than it was in the physical body.
Let's take some calls here for you. Let's start with Jerry in Nashville, Tennessee, east of the Rockies. Jerry, welcome to the program.
I'm on the radio with George from coast to coast. Hey, George, Andrew.
Hi there.
I'm a big fan. How you doing, guys?
Good.
We're good.
Hey, I got a question for you. I was at the Big South Fork here in Tennessee doing some adventuring, and there is a legend. Well, there is the people there called the Clovis people. Have you heard of those, Andrew?
Yes, yeah. We write extensively about the Clovis people in the book.
All right, thank you. Tell us a little bit more about the Clovis people, Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, just talk about the Clovis. I mean, they rise probably around 13,200 years ago, which is at the end of the last ice age. They're around for a few hundred years, maybe as little as 400 or 500 years. They achieve quite a state of high culture in the Americas, particularly obviously in North America, which is where they principally were. But then suddenly they disappear, and they disappear coincident to what appears to be a major cataclysm that devastated not just North America, but the Northern Hemisphere at this time, and which we can put down to probably the fragmentation of a comet that peppered North America and created wildfires that essentially consumed perhaps as much as 75% of the human population at this time.
Wow.
And also wiped out the so-called Pleistocene megafauna. You know, those are the big animals that were roaming around, you know, like the saber-toothed tiger, the mammoth, giant sloth, giant camels, and many more that roamed the world up to this point and then just suddenly disappear at this time. So the Clovis people would seem to have suffered at the hands of this cataclysm. But this was something that was pretty universal. I mean, you can find evidence of this cataclysm in Europe. It's there in South America. It's there in Egypt. It's there in East Asia. And it's something that was pretty universal. And it also triggered a mini ice age that lasted for about 1,200 years. They call it the Younger Dryas event. And it actually comes to an end around 9,600 BC, which is precisely the date that Göbekli Tepe is constructed in southeast Turkey. And I spend a few chapters at the beginning of the book talking about Göbekli Tepe and how that fits into this bigger picture of the Denisovans and the gift of civilization being handed to them by the Denisovans. And what I show is that places like Göbekli Tepe were created as a response to this cataclysm. You know, in other words, they suddenly felt the necessity to start building what we call monumental architecture for the first time, probably not just at Göbekli Tepe, but arguably in other parts of the world. And I think that the reason why they did this was to create these instant points of access to the sky world to deal with the supernatural creatures or forces that were seen to be associated with comet impacts and devastation brought upon the tails of comets. And this seems to be a very valid theory, and people have actually worked with this. I mean, I first proposed it in my book, Göbekli Tepe, Genesis of the Gods, in 2014. But it seems to have been adopted by a number of mainstream researchers. And I think it's probably right. But, I mean, obviously, this doesn't have anything directly related to the Denisovans. But what it does show is that the memory of the Denisovans were probably wiped out when this cataclysm actually took place, and that thereafter that we were almost in a state of amnesia down to the rise of civilization in places like Sumeria, Egypt, the Indus Valley, China, etc., several thousand years later. And of course, we're only today beginning to grasp the significance of this cataclysm and what it did for us. I mean, it probably stopped civilization rising many thousands of years earlier. You know, in other words, it sort of caused us to sort of go back and start again, and that this was something that affected us for many, many thousands of years. So, in other words, any memory of the Denisovans and what they gave to us was probably lost at that time.
Would any of these civilizations been around the time period of the Noah Flood?
Well, I mean, the Noah's Flood is obviously a biblical concept. And if we go by biblical chronology, it suggests that it took place something like, 2500, 3000 BC. Well, archaeologists, climatologists, various others have tried to see if they can find a flood that took place in the Middle East around this time. And although there were minor floods, I actually think that Noah's Flood is a memory of this much earlier event, the so-called Younger Dryas event that took place from around 10,800 BC down to about 9,600 BC, with a whole series of cataclysms involving, comet impact, flooding as the ice caps began to melt very quickly due to this impact event, and the covering up of many low-lying areas in every part of the world, which would have included any very early settlements that were on coastal areas. All of these would have been lost at this time. And I think that Noah's flood, flood of Noah, is a memory of that, in my opinion. I think that the biblical chronology is probably slightly out.
Bill in Seattle, Washington's with us, west of the Rockies. Hi, Bill.
Hello. How you doing, George?
Okay.
Big fan. Thought I'd check in with Mr. Collins. I'm a big fan. I had a question for Mr. Collins. Does he have any information or connection between the Denisovans and the ancient ones of Ohio, in particular the Edina and the Hopewell mound builders?
Any tie in there, Andrew?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, in many of the mounds built by the Edina, in particular, large skeletons have been found. Anything between 7 and 7.5 feet tall. And very often, when these giant skeletons are found, they are in the center of the mounds, and there are other normal-sized human beings around them, as if the giants were the important ones. In other words, they were either the leaders or the shamans of the communities, and that they form some kind of elite, that had the knowledge relating to this cosmic journey to the stars that would be passed on through perhaps initiation to other human beings who were of regular size. And this pattern is found again and again. And it's created what's known as the Edina elite theory, which basically suggests that these tall individuals were the leaders, were the shamans of the Edina, and that they existed at this time and were probably the remnant of a much earlier, human society that I personally would connect with the Denisovans. And we certainly know that there were many giants existing amongst Native American tribes at the time of first contact. I mean, a number of Europeans encountered giants, both in North America as leaders. tribes, but also in places like Patagonia in South America. There were whole tribes of giants. I mean, pictures were drawn of them with, obviously, normal-sized human beings next to them. And they were there, I mean, you know, in the 17th century. But unfortunately, like everything, we wipe everything out. So that, you know, come 100 years later, these giants were no longer present. You know, they decreased in size because we'd wiped out almost every single one of them. So now the tallest people were now probably no more than 6 to 6.5 feet. And of course, the skeptics then come forward and say, well, look, you know, prove that there were people who lived and existed who were 7 to 7.5 feet tall. And of course, you know, without that evidence of living human beings, it became very difficult to prove. And of course, coming forward even to the 18th, 19th century, all of these giants had vanished. So we have only the word of these old ancient accounts, really, to tell us that. But of course, there were hundreds, if not thousands, of oversized skeletons found within these Edina mounds in particular. But of course, they've all disappeared now. They were all repatriated at the beginning of the 1990s by places like the Smithsonian Institute, given back to the Native American tribes on whose territories these bones were found. So there are no giant bones in any museum, certainly any state museum. And until we find one of these giant skeletons or just a bone that can be tested by, you know, reputable geneticists under the auspice of archaeologists and actual scientific papers written, all of this will always remain speculation, no matter what anybody writes, whether it be myself, Greg, or any of our colleagues.
Why would you say the Denisovans are important to us today?
Well, because I think that they gave us the rudiments of civilization. I don't think that it was aliens. I don't think it was Atlantis. I think that they are the missing chapter of history, and that we need to understand this, and we need to know that they were incredibly advanced, much more advanced than we were when we first encountered them, probably about 45 to 50,000 years ago.
That's pretty dramatic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and so this is all brand new. We didn't even know that Denisovans existed 10 years ago. That's the incredible thing about
Who uncovered them, Andrew?
Well, Russian archaeologists working at the Denisova Cave. They found bones, they found these huge molar teeth. In fact, the molars were so large that initially they were dismissed as those of cave bears because they were so big.
Jeez.
And yet it was found, no, they belonged to a type of human, but not us. And because of the location, the Denisova Cave, which is named after a hermit who lived there in the 18th century called Denis, they actually began to refer to them as Denisovans. And this is the correct term for them. I mean, they're not seen officially yet as a different species of human, but this is coming, surely, because they aren't us. You know, they are like the Neanderthals. In fact, they are a sister group of the Neanderthals. They're closer to the Neanderthals than they are to us, but they were much more advanced. As I said, they created beautiful jewelry. They probably had tailored clothing. They may well have ridden around in horses. They had beautiful stone tools. And we've also found pencils made of ochre.
You know, pencils, like that's pretty dramatic, too. We're going to come back and take final calls with Andrew Collins in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to our final segment with Andrew Collins. Andrew, your books are available where? Amazon, all over the place?
Yes, Amazon and Barnes & Noble. As I said, this book is called Denisovan Origins, Hybrid Humans, Göbekli Tepe, and the Genesis of the Giants of Ancient America, which obviously we've talked about, but, I mean, it's much more than that, because what it's setting out is everything that came to be civilization, where it came from, how it started, and, you know, how it eventually creates places like Göbekli Tepe. See, that's been a big mystery. We know that Göbekli Tepe, which is these these circles of standing stones that have these T-shaped terminations with these beautiful carved animals, beautiful human forms or whatever on them. And this appears to be the remnant of a lost civilization. And this is obviously what, you know, for all sense and purposes, is what it comes across as. But what we're saying is that this is the tail end of the knowledge and the wisdom that the Denisovans handed to us as early as 45,000 years ago, and that it culminates with Göbekli Tepe. And from Göbekli Tepe outwards, the so-called Neolithic Revolution began. You know, the revolution in agriculture and metallurgy and animal husbandry, you know, and living in city-states. In other words, everything came down to Göbekli Tepe. That's the final pinnacle of all of this knowledge and wisdom.
Okay, let's go back to the calls. Walter in Pennsylvania. Hey, Walt, go ahead.
Hi, George. Great conversation you got going with Mr. Collins.
He's a genius.
George, given what Mr. Collins said, I think he might agree with what I've been saying to you guys over the months. You know, we have this multiplicity of going back into the Neolithic and even the Paleolithic. We have the different hominid species, the Denisovans, Cro-Magnon man, the Neanderthals, et cetera. And George, I think it's genetically impossible that nearly 8 billion of us are all of the same species.
Well, what do you think of that, Andrew? Are we or are we not?
Well, I mean, technically, we are, yes. I mean, you know, according to official views amongst anthropologists is that our ancestors came out of Africa probably around 65,000 years ago. And moved towards the west into Europe and eastwards into Asia. And, you know, we encountered these other types of humans as we went along. There were Neanderthals who were quite small. There were the Denisovans who would seem to be very large. And there were at least one, two or more other types of humans, so-called archaic humans in existence. I mean, there were probably Homo erectus, which we don't know much about, but we think they were probably quite small as well. They were still living in parts of Asia, let's say 45,000 years ago. And if you go into places like Ireland, Southeast Asia, you have Homo floriensis. And these are the so-called hobbits that are found on the island of Flores. And they're no more than 3 to 4 feet tall. So, you know, there was a world at this time that was like something out of a J.R.R. Tolkien novel, you know, like The Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit, you know, that you had all these different types of people, all looking different, all of different heights. And it seems as if we coexisted. I mean, perhaps on occasions we would battle against each other. Other times we would live in harmony. Other times we would interbreed with them. And this is what was going on here. But then, obviously, very gradually, it's us that becomes the dominant ones. And even though we still carry the genes, the DNA, the ancestry of all of these past types of archaic human within us, ultimately, today, we are all anatomical modern humans.
Stephen in Minneapolis, welcome to the show, Stephen. Go ahead.
Hi, yeah. So I've been watching Beyond Belief for a long time. Just want to tell you I love that show.
Oh, thank you.
I've seen you, Andrew, on there before. So my question is, my roommate and longtime friend, he's almost 6'7". He's 6'6". And his brothers are the same. They're about 6'4 and 6'5". But I was just wondering how widespread Denisovan DNA might be in general population nowadays.
Good question. Is it everywhere, Andrew?
No, it's not. It's east of what I call the Denisovan line, and that's a sort of line that comes from the Arctic down through Siberia, down through either India or Pakistan. Every human population, with one exception, that has Denisovan DNA is east of that line. And the further you get towards the east and southeast, the more DNA that you actually have. Until you come to places like Papua New Guinea and Australia, where the amount is as much as 5 to 6%. But of course, this doesn't therefore mean that these people are going to be giants. I mean, it doesn't work that way. I mean, that may not be the genes that have been handed down through the generations to these modern populations. As I mentioned earlier, they have other types of genes inherited from the Denisovans, including being able to resist extreme cold or being able to live in extremely high environments, or possibly the passing on of these autistic genes might have come from the Denisovans. So the gene relating to extreme height doesn't seem to have been passed down to us. That seems to have died out. It probably was there with some of the early Denisovan hybrids, but it seems to have been, washed out at some point, watered down and washed out. So, you know, you can't look at, let's say, the people in Papua New Guinea who have the highest level of Denisovan DNA and say, well, look, why aren't they giants? It doesn't work that way. Genetics doesn't work that way. What's been passed on is not genes relating to extreme height. But what we can say is that if you go to places like Ohio and West Virginia, where there have been found hundreds of oversized skeletons in Native American mounds, but relating to the Adena culture in particular, there are so many of these skeletons that it's above any normal average of what's referred to as the genetic disorder of gigantism amongst any particular community. I mean, obviously, we know that baseball players, you know, are extremely tall. But the reason why they're extremely tall is because they have a gene that allows them to grow to extreme size. But that has nothing to do with a gene that's inherited from the Denisovans. But what we can say is that the amount of giants or oversized skeletons that are found in the Adena mounds is too much for it simply to be gigantism. In other words, a gene disorder. You know, you are truly dealing with a particular human society here that was of extreme size. And as I said, these giants were also found in places like Patagonia, you know, in the extreme tip of South America, when the first Europeans turned up there. They were also there as the elites, the leaders, the shamans of various tribes when the first Europeans entered North America. There's many accounts of us encountering these giants. And you have to say, well, if they were a human society in their own right, who were they? And we're putting our money on the fact that they were Denisovan hybrids who retained that, you know, that gene that allowed them to grow so tall.
How many Native American legends were revolving around the Denisovans?
Well, I mean, obviously they don't mention them by name, but there are a large number of Native American legends relating to giants, particularly in California. I mean, there is, particularly around places like Mount Shasta, there are dozens of accounts that talk about interaction between, the tribal communities and these giants that would either live individually or in small groups. And yes, that there would appear to be, you know, battles that took place between them. And there was clearly friction going on between these different communities. But now they've gone, you know, that they clearly don't exist anymore. So they must have been wiped out either by the Native Americans themselves or by the earliest Europeans to reach these same territories.
Next up, let's go to Kaylin in Mississippi. Welcome to the program. Hi, Kaylin.
Hi. So I'm new to the show, and I listen to it quite frequently.
Well, good. Often. Welcome aboard.
Well, thank you. My question was, so I did the 23andMe genealogy, and I'm kind of confused by it because I tested 99.7 or 99.3% Neanderthal, and I'm not quite sure what that means. Not 99.3%, but out of all of the people that have done 23andMe. Like, I'm 99.3% more Neanderthal than anybody that's done it.
Andrew, how can she be a Neanderthal?
The simple facts are that nobody in the world has any more than about 2-3% Neanderthal DNA in them. With Denisovans, it could be anything up to 5 or 6%. Now, if you are of, let's say, East or Southeast Asian in origin, the chances are that you are going to have some Denisovan in you. If your roots are in Europe, for instance, the chances are that you're going to have 2-3% Neanderthal, but no Denisovan. But there are exceptions. I mean, somebody that I know went to the same, genetic service with National Geographic, and it came back that they had about 3% Denisovan DNA. And they couldn't understand this at all because, they were born and bred in Europe, so was all of their ancestors. Their only ancestry went back to Italy, but also Iran. They had, just a little bit of ancestry from Iran. So it's possible that it came via that route. So you will find some, Caucasians with it, but it's so little, and it has, and it cannot make any impact on the overall studies to do with the levels of Denisovan DNA in Europeans. I mean, the only Europeans that are known to have Denisovan DNA are the Finns, the people from Finland. They have a very small amount, and the reason that they have a small amount is because they also have between 6-7% Asian ancestry as well. Their ancestors originally coming over the top of the Ural Mountains that border between Asia and Europe, and obviously they came into Northern Europe and remained there and have kept some of their Asian ancestry, and this is why they've got Denisovan DNA as well.
Andrew, when do we see you again in the States?
I'm there for two big conferences in October. One is CPAC in Newport Beach. That's the first weekend in October. And then the following weekend, I'm at Virginia Beach talking at the Edgar Cayce's ARE Ancient Mysteries Conference. So I hope to see some of you out there. Obviously, I'll be talking all about the Denisovans and their legacy and impact on human civilization.
Let's go to Denver in Jackson, Mississippi. Hi, Denver. Thanks for calling. We'll squeeze you in here.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'd like to ask Andrew, is he aware of the guest you had on a couple weeks ago that talked about this fisherman and his son that got lost and went inside the earth? And they met these giants. These giants spoke English, and they stayed with him for 2 years. And when the young man came out and survived, he wrote a book. I would like to know the name of the guest that was on 2 weeks ago, and like for Andrew to comment on that.
Where was this? Where?
I think was
they went inside the earth. This happened around 1808. Lost inside the earth, and they met giants.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, the chances are that there were some of these oversized individuals still existing at the beginning of the 19th century, but they were wiped out. They were wiped out either by Europeans or Native Americans, and they just simply vanish completely. And although we did have some of their skeletal remains in museums, they were all repatriated at the beginning of the 1990s with the so-called NAGPRA law, Native American law of repatriation of Native American remains. So we haven't got anything to test. And genetic studies only really started getting off the ground at the beginning of the 1990s. And by that time, all of these bones had gone. So unless we find in an absolute, pristine archaeological context, giant bones that are then analyzed and their genome sequenced by geneticists, to find out exactly who they are, we cannot really take it any further. All we can say that these giants existed, and there's a good possibility they are related to the Denisovans.
Great research, Andrew. I want to thank you for being on the program again. Andrew's website, his name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's andrewcollins.com. And the book we're talking about here, Denisovan Origins, Human Hybrid Humans, Göbekli Tepe, and the Genesis of the Giants of Ancient America. Up next, Dan Wright joins us with the CIA UFO papers.